The night was thick with humidity, the kind that clung to your skin and made you wish for a cold shower. My blind date had been a disaster. He was rude, dismissive, and when I politely declined his offer for a nightcap, he simply shrugged and told me to find my way home. It was late, and I didn't want to argue, so I left without another word, regretting every moment I had wasted on him. I walked through the empty streets, my heels clicked against the pavement. The city was eerily quiet. The warm air pressed against me, and I could feel sweat trickling down my back. I spotted a 7-Eleven up ahead, its fluorescent lights harsh and uninviting, but I needed a drink, something cold to calm my nerves. As I pushed open the door, a bell chimed above me. The store was deserted, save for a clerk who was slumped over the counter, half asleep, and a man lurking between the aisles. He was tall, with greasy, unkempt hair and clothes that looked like they hadn't been washed in weeks. His eyes were on me the moment I walked in, tracking my movements like a predator sizing up its prey. I tried to ignore him, but I could feel his gaze burning into my back as I made my way to the coolers. I grabbed a bottle of water, my fingers trembling slightly as I twisted off the cap and took a long sip, hoping it would steady my nerves. The man was closer now, moving slowly, deliberately, as if savoring each step. I could hear his ragged breathing, the sound thick and wet like something was caught in his throat. My heart started to race. I turned to leave, but he was suddenly there, blocking my path. His eyes were wild and bloodshot, with a kind of manic intensity that made my skin crawl. He grinned, revealing yellowed teeth, and I could smell the sour stench of alcohol on his breath. "Hey there, pretty lady," he slurred, his voice a low rasp. "What's a girl like you doing out all alone at this hour?" I tried to step around him, but he moved to block me again, his grin widening. "How about we have some fun tonight, huh? I know some places. It'll be so fun." My stomach twisted in revulsion and I shook my head.
"I'm not interested."
I tried to step around him again, but he leaned in closer, his hands brushing against my arm, leaving a cold, clammy sensation where he touched me. I recoiled. "Come on," he urged. "A little adventure is good sometimes."
"I said no. Now get lost."
I pushed past him and hurried out the door, my breath coming in short panic gasps. The warm night air felt suffocating after the chill of the store, but I started walking faster. I could still feel his eyes on me. I forced myself to keep moving, and then I heard it. Footsteps. They were heavy and uneven, shuffling behind me in a way that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. I glanced over my shoulder, but the street was empty, just a long stretch of darkened buildings and dim streetlights. But I knew he was there, lurking in the shadows. I quickened my pace. Each step felt like it was dragging me closer to something terrible. The footsteps behind me grew louder and more insistent, and I could almost feel his presence closing in on me. I turned a corner, hoping to lose him, but the street was dark. That's when I started to run. I didn't care if I looked ridiculous, I just needed to get away. The footsteps were right behind me now, pounding against the pavement in a relentless pursuit. I risked another glance over my shoulder, and that's when I saw him. He was running after me, his face twisted in a grotesque mask of fury, his eyes wide and gleaming with a crazed light. He was close, too close, and I could see the wide grin stretched across his face. Panic surged through me, giving me a burst of speed as I sprinted toward my apartment building, the only safe place I could think of. The door was just ahead. I fumbled with my keys, still running. My hands shook so badly that I almost dropped them. I could hear him. I could feel his breath on the back of my neck, hot and foul. My vision blurred with tears. Then I heard the click. Seconds before his hands could reach me, I hurriedly threw myself inside. Slamming it shut behind me, I leaned against the door, gasping for breath. The silence of my apartment was almost deafening after the noise of the chase, but I couldn't shake the feeling that he was still out there, just beyond the door, waiting. I moved to the window, peeking out from behind the curtain, and my heart nearly stopped. There he was, standing under the streetlight, staring up at my window with the same twisted grin on his face. His eyes locked onto mine, his madness transcended beyond the glass window to reach out and touch my soul. He smiled wider. I froze.
It was nice meeting you.
I backed away from the window, and even though I was safe inside, the terror that gripped me told me otherwise. Because deep down, I knew the nightmare wasn't over, was it? Working the night shift at 7-Eleven had its perks. The quiet hours gave me time to think, to plan out my future, or at least that's what I told myself. But then there was Carl. He started showing up a few months ago, always parking across the street, just sitting in his car, staring at the store. At first, I didn't pay much attention. People did weird things at night, and maybe he was just another insomniac who liked to watch the world go by. But then he kept coming back, every night. Same car, same spot, same unsettling stare. He never came in, never bought anything, just watched. Who the hell does that? My unease grew into paranoia. I'd catch myself glancing out the window every few minutes, expecting to see his car. And sure enough, there he was, like clockwork. It got to a point where I couldn't focus on anything else. One night, I decided enough was enough. I wasn't going to let some creep mess with my head. So I walked out of the store, my heart pounding in my chest, and approached his car.
What the hell are you doing out here every night?
He looked at me, his face expressionless, and said,
"Just waiting for someone."
Waiting for who? You've been sitting out here for weeks. What the hell are you waiting for? Without another word, Carl started his car and drove off. I stood there in the cold, watching his taillights disappear into the night, feeling more unsettled than ever. But the next night, he was back. That's when things started getting really strange. It wasn't just at work anymore. I'd leave the store after my shift and feel eyes on me, like someone was watching from the shadows. I'd turn around quickly, expecting to see Carl's car, but there'd be nothing. Then it followed me home. I'd sit in my apartment, every creak and groan of the building sending my heart racing. I'd check the locks 3, 4, 5 times, convinced someone was outside my door. The man was driving me paranoid.
"You're losing it, man. Get a grip."
But I couldn't. It was like he had wormed his way into my mind, making me doubt everything. I started avoiding mirrors, afraid of what I might see looking back at me. My sleep was broken by nightmares, visions of someone standing over my bed, just watching. Desperate for answers, I started digging into the history of the area, trying to find anything that could explain Carl's behavior. That's when I stumbled upon the old news article at the local library. They detailed a series of violent crimes from years ago, murders, all connected to a 24-hour convenience store just like mine. The killer had never been caught, but the stories all had eerie similarities. Victims stalked, watched, mentally harassed, then attacked late at night.
Jesus, what if he's not just watching the store? What if he's watching me?
I became obsessed with the idea that Carl was connected to those murders. My paranoia spiraled, turning my every thought into a potential threat. One final night, it all came to a head. I was stocking shelves when the power went out. The store plunged into darkness, and my heart stopped. I reached for my phone, but the screen remained black. Dead.
No, not now.
I fumbled for the flashlight we kept behind the counter, the beam cutting through the darkness. That's when I heard it. Footsteps. Someone was inside the store with me. I tried to stay calm, tried to think rationally, but the panic set in like a vice, squeezing every rational thought from my mind.
"Who's there?"
No answer. I heard the footsteps again, closer this time. I backed up, clutching the flashlight like a weapon. The beam caught movement, a shadow darting just out of sight. Then he was on me, a dark figure, faceless in the shadows. Knocked the flashlight from my hand. I fought back, blind and desperate, feeling my strength waning as the figure overpowered me. He pinned me down, something cold and sharp pressed to my throat. That was it.
I accepted that Carl had got to me in the dark. But just as I felt the pressure increase, there was a loud bang, and the weight lifted off me. I heard footsteps, frantic, someone shouting my name. The lights flickered back on, and I saw Carl standing over the body of the man who attacked me, a gun in his hand, a look of grim determination on his face. Carl? What the hell?
He's been watching you, waiting for the right moment.
I was too stunned to speak. Carl holstered his gun, breathing heavily.
I'm an undercover detective. I've been tracking this guy for weeks. I needed him to make a move, and I used you as bait. Hope you don't mind.
You used me?
I didn't have a choice. He would have killed again if I didn't stop him.
It hit me then. The real terror wasn't the thought of being watched. It was the realization that I had been living under the shadow of death without even knowing it. Carl hadn't been watching me. He'd been watching the killer, waiting for him to strike. As the paramedics arrived, Carl walked out into the night, leaving me to process what had just happened. The store was quiet again, but it would never feel safe. Not after knowing how close I came to being another victim in the darkness. Working the night shift at the 7-Eleven store was usually uneventful. The hours dragged on, the hum of the fluorescent lights and the soft buzz of the cooler providing the only background noise. I liked the solitude, though. It gave me time to think, to clear my head after long days. But that night, something changed. It was around 2 a.m. when he walked in, a man in his late 40s, maybe early 50s, with graying hair that fell messily around his face. He wore a threadbare coat, the kind that had seen too many winters, and his eyes, sharp and restless, darted around the store as if he was searching for something, or someone.
Evening.
He nodded at me, a strange smile tugging at the corners of his mouth. He moved slowly, almost deliberately, as he picked up a few items, a pack of gum, a bottle of water, and a newspaper. When he approached the counter, there was something unsettling in his demeanor, something I couldn't quite place. He set the items down, then reached into his pocket and pulled out a coin. It was old, worn, the kind of coin you'd find in a dusty antique shop. He held it up between his thumb and forefinger.
Pick a side, heads or tails.
I stared at him, unsure if he was serious. He didn't look like the type to be joking around, though. There was an intensity in his eyes, a barely concealed edge that made me uneasy.
No thanks. I'm not much of a gambler.
He ignored my refusal, flipping the coin between his fingers, the metal catching the light with each rotation.
It's just a game, honey. Heads or tails?
My pulse quickened. His insistence was unnerving, and the way he stared at me as if waiting for something made my skin crawl. I glanced at the door, wondering if I should call someone, but the streets outside were deserted.
I really don't want to.
He suddenly pulled an apple out of his coat pocket and placed it on the counter with a quiet thud. It was a deep red, the kind that looked polished and perfect, but its presence felt wrong, like it didn't belong there.
Pick a side.
His voice was calm, almost soothing, but it had an undercurrent of something dark. My stomach twisted in knots, the air in the room growing thick with tension. I didn't want to play his game, but I could tell he wasn't going to let me refuse. Something about his eyes told me that this wasn't a game at all.
Fine. Heads.
He grinned, a twisted, joyless smile, and tossed the coin into the air. It spun slowly, as if time had slowed down, and then landed on the counter with a soft clink. Heads.
Huh, you're lucky.
What was that all about?
He looked at me, his smile fading, replaced by a cold, distant expression.
I used to be a gambler, obsessed with fate. This coin, it was my lucky charm. It won me my first $100, and then we never looked back. But one day, it betrayed me. I lost everything. Money, respect, my life. But then the coin told me, inflict pain upon everyone who laughed at me. I shot every player at the table.
every single one of them. The coin said it was their time, not mine. My heart pounded in my chest. This wasn't just a story. The way he spoke, the conviction in his voice, it was terrifyingly real. Worse yet, I had heard this story before, one which our town considered a forgotten legend. He leaned closer, his voice dropping to a whisper. Since then, I've carried out the ritual every time someone guesses wrong. He tapped the apple on the counter with a finger, his eyes locking onto mine. I felt cold, the blood draining from my face. I wanted to scream, to run, but my legs felt like lead. He stood up straight, pocketed the coin, and walked towards the door. She was Cynthia. With that, he left, the door swinging shut behind him. I stood there, frozen, trying to make sense of what had just happened. My eyes fell on the apple, still sitting on the counter. I reached out hesitantly, my fingers trembling as they brushed against it. But when I picked it up, it was no longer the pristine fruit he had placed. The apple suddenly turned half-eaten, its flesh rotten and brown, as if it had been decaying for weeks. I dropped it in horror, backing away, my mind racing. The name, Cynthia, it struck a chord in me. I had heard the stories before, the urban legends of Bloody Jack, a serial killer from the 60s who had been obsessed with fate, flipping coins to decide the lives of his victims. He had been shot dead by police after calling them to a scene of his final murders, six men with whom he played poker. The police found him sitting by the bar, an apple in hand, waiting for them. The last word out of his mouth was his wife's name, Cynthia. My breath came in shallow gasps as I pieced it together. The man, the coin, the apple, they weren't just legends, but a reality.